I call this meeting of Sylvania City Council for June 4th, 2012 to order. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Mike Brown.
Here.
Katie Cathalini.
Here.
Doug Hayno.
Here.
Sandy Husman.
Here.
Mark Lukey.
Here.
Todd Milner.
Here.
Mary Westfall.
Here.
All seven members of City Council are present, therefore a quorum does exist. I welcome you all to this City Council meeting. I know that the Committee of the Whole was held here earlier, and that probably will be added to the agenda by Mr. Lukey. If there are other items that you wish to address council on, when we get to those items in the agenda, please let me know by raising your hand, and I will recognize you at the appropriate time. There are council agendas on the two side tables, if you haven't found one already. At this time, I welcome you to join us in our Pledge of Allegiance, this meeting led by Mr. Brown.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before proceeding on with additions or amendments to the agenda, I'm going to have a short remembrance of James E. Sini, the former mayor of the city of Sylvania, and then we'll have a moment of silence at the end. I don't know if all of you had the opportunity to know Jim, but he was a visionary leader, especially in this community. He led this city as mayor for 18 years between 1977 and 1995. That was a period of a lot of growth in our community. His idea was always to maintain the quality of life for our residents while going through those growing pains. And he followed through with that. He was a champion of recreation in our community. Under his leadership, the Tam O'Shanter complex was purchased by the city and turned to public use. He was the founder, under his leadership, the Sylvania Joint Area Recreation District was founded as well, one of the first in the state. He took new legislation from the state and made it work here in our community. He brought the city and the township and the schools together, took us down to the county, and I remember meeting with Tony Piza, the attorney general, the county prosecutor at that time, and we figured out how to get it done in Sylvania. And Jim was the leading person in those efforts. And then he followed through more with the purchase and the funding and the construction of Pacesetter Park. The rec district wasn't able to sell bonds yet. There was no funding in the community from the schools or the township, and the city stepped in with the bonding capacity to make that work. He also wanted to preserve what Sylvania used to be, and he was instrumental in the foundation of the Sylvania Historical Village and the museum that are up the street. And he was more than just a visionary leader for Sylvania. He was a regional leader that came out of the city of Sylvania. He was chairman of the Northwest Ohio Mayors and Managers Association. He was chair of TMACOG. He was listened to by communities around the area. And the only reason he left the mayor's office in 1995 was because Governor Voinovich wanted him to come to work for the state of Ohio. He went down, worked for years in Ohio Economic Development, and brought work and jobs into our state and into Northwest Ohio. He was instrumental in the steel plant out in Delta, Ohio. It is hard to lose a visionary leader, especially with sudden death like that. He is a loss to the community, and I ask you at this moment to rise and join me in a moment of silence in memory of James E. Sini. Thank you. I have been in contact with his widow, Dawn Sini. There are no plans that I'm aware of yet because of the difficulty of the investigation in Ontario by the Ontario Provincial Police and then getting his remains back into the country. She is struggling with that, but the city has extended her all courtesies and assistance that we can to help in this difficult time. Thank you. Let's move on with agenda item 3, which is additions to the agenda. Mr. Milner. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have a report of the Committee of the Whole from this evening. There are still people here for that, so let's add that in as 4A. That's all I have. Other items from other members of council. Mrs. Westfall.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to give a committee report from the Safety Committee, and I'd like to give an update on the Sylvania Youth Conservation Corps.
All right, we'll make the Safety Committee report 7A, and we'll make the Conservation Corps 7B.
Thank you.
Other items from members of City Council? Mr. Haney.
I'd like to add a discussion of appropriate procedures for considering a Tarta withdrawal referendum.
All right, we'll add that as agenda item 9, Tarta withdrawal referendum. Seeing no additional items from members of City Council, Mr. Eichenauer.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Smith.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Chief Rodas.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Aller.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Or Mr. Moe.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
All right, thank you. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as amended?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries and the agenda is approved as amended. That gets us to item 4, approval of the May 21st meeting minutes. Mr. Milner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Unless there are any corrections, I move that the Journal of Minutes of the meeting of Sylvania City Council of May 21st, 2012 be approved as submitted.
Mrs. Westfall.
On page 3 at the bottom, it talks about the Employee and Community Relations Committee meeting being at 8 a.m. on June 8th, and at the bottom of our agenda today, it's 8 a.m. on June 6th. I believe it's June 6th, but just as a point of clarification, there are not two meetings.
No, there's a Tarta meeting on Wednesday.
June 6th.
June 6th. And
is there another meeting on the 8th?
We have a
committee
of the whole for the next day.
We do have a committee of the whole scheduled for Thursday the 7th at 7:30. It's a budget meeting concerning streets.
Right. Nothing on the 8th.
Nothing on the 8th.
This is a point of clarification. I just wasn't sure. It's a point of clarification. So I think just to amend the minutes to reflect the correct day, which is June 6th.
June 6th.
Do you need a motion to amend that, or?
Let's just revise the original motion to approve the meeting minutes as amended, and then I need a second. Who made the original motion?
I move that we approve the meeting minutes as amended.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the meeting minutes from May 21st, 2012 as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and those minutes are approved as amended. That brings us to added agenda item 4A, which is a report of the Committee of the Whole meeting held this evening in these council chambers at 6 p.m. Mr. Lufke.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Miller and I are going to tag team this. This was a discussion about Plan Development 1 2012 request from Lourdes University. Both Mr. Milner and Mr. Hainem have been excused from those discussions. Council voted at its last meeting to excuse them from those discussions. Mr. Milner was taking notes, kindly taking notes as we went through the process, so I would ask him to give us a quick update.
Thank you, Mr. Lukey, and thank you for running the meeting. All members of council were here, as well as from the administration, Mr. Moen, Mr. Aller, Chief Rodas, and Mr. Sanford, and I think Mr. Mayor came in as well. I'm going to abbreviate these notes. Mr. Aller presented the traffic study that was done, Brent Road, McCord Road, and he stated that a signal is now warranted at that intersection, and he said that the proposed development would not cause any additional design changes to that intersection. Chief Rodas presented stats, statistics of Lourdes Commons versus Wickford Woods. And actually, over the last 20 months, the calls have decreased to Lord's Commons as opposed to a 20-month study of the former Wickford Woods. Fire response, however, has increased over there, and traffic stops have increased, but that's not necessarily due to students, but due to increased enforcement. Dr. Helmer presented an updated plan. There was increased landscaping, 75 feet setback north to south from the athletic building, 50 feet east to west. Allen Street has got a 6-foot privacy fence proposed, opaque glass on the building, the walking path 40 feet to the east. There was an attorney present, Mr. Marshall Bennett, who is representing some of the condo owners. He felt that the Planning Commission decision, the flipping the buildings, was appropriate. He was very concerned about the sale of memberships to general public if this athletic building is built. The council members asked many questions of Mr. Bennett, and Mr. Bennett reiterated later in the committee that he said that the membership, that no memberships, the clause of no memberships being sold needs to be in a binding contract. Dr. Helmer said that there is no plan to sell memberships. We started getting comments from the citizens. Ken Marciniak, who is a member of the Planning Commission, spoke to keep the building, the athletic building, on Convent instead of the proposed southern location. Then we had several citizens that spoke both for and against the project. And I will note that for those in favor of the project included a professor at Lourdes as well as some students. Mr. Lukey then asked each member of council for comment. And Mrs. Capellini was concerned about a comparison to urban active. She reiterated that Lourdes University have always been good neighbors. Mr. Brown said that he also was upset with a comparison to urban active that was brought forth by Mr. Marciniak, and also said that Lourdes has always been a good steward and that he views that as just a brownfield now. And he was concerned that if the athletic building is moved to the north on Convent, that that's simply going to disturb those neighbors on Convent as opposed to the neighbors, the residences to the south. Mrs. Westfall said that she was glad to hear support for the project, that Lourdes has worked very hard to be a good neighbor. And she reiterated that she believes that the classroom building needs to be on Convent. Sandy discussed the height of buildings in our code, and noted that the proposed athletic building does meet that criteria. And she felt that even though this has been a difficult decision, the athletic building needs to stay, be at the south location. Mr. Lukey was also concerned about the athletic building on Convent, as proposed by the Planning Commission. He noted that Lourdes has worked very hard with these neighbors, and he suggested that a final vote be held off until June the 18th by City Council. There was a motion, a recommendation to City Council that legislation be drafted for the June 18th council member to modify the Plan Commission plan to have the athletic building to the south, to introduce and include the revisions brought forth by Lourdes University on June the 1st, also adding 10 mature evergreens south of the athletic building, and also to explore the possibility to add the condition of no membership sales to the general public. And this motion to council by the Committee of the Whole was a 5-0 unanimous vote. That's my report.
Mr. Mayor, with that report, I believe, would this be an appropriate time for me to we need to make a motion based on the committee's recommendation that the law director prepare legislation, correct?
That is correct.
Is this an appropriate time to do that?
it is, I think, for doing that. The law director informs me that you do not need to take another vote for Mr. Hanem and Mr. Milner to withdraw due to a conflict of interest, but let the record show that you are withdrawn from the table for any vote that takes place now.
Right. And therefore, because Mr. Hanem is pushed back, I would like to move that the law director and administration be directed to draft legislation and present it at the June 18th regular meeting. The motion would accept the Plan Commission's recommendation to change the zoning for PD 1 2012 from the existing R2 to R1 and would modify in part the Plan Commission's recommendation as follows: to maintain the general placement of buildings submitted by Lourdes, to conform to the submission by Lourdes at its original filing to the Plan Commission, which is to keep the arena on the south end of that site, and then accept modifications as shown by Lourdes University's submission to Council of June 1st, 2012, and its accompanying letter that deals with the time frame to phase the building project. In addition to that, would accept the recommendation by the citizens to plant at least 10 full-grown evergreen trees at the south side of the building lot, and ask Mr. Moen to make recommendations regarding language to limit the use of the building to university students and faculty, and exclude any sales of memberships to the general public. That language would need to be worked out in conjunction with Lourdes.
Mr. Moen.
Did I misstate
the,
Mr. Moen?
The only qualifier was the limit the use to...
No, I'm sorry. I guess what I really intended to say was the limit to sale to the general public. Yeah, I'm sorry. Got a little ahead of myself.
Gotcha.
All right, fine. So that is the motion that reflects the sense of the committee of the whole meeting.
Second.
All right, it's moved and seconded per that long motion, but to prepare legislation.
And I believe it's probably more better said on the tape of the meeting. Mr. Moen was here for that.
All right. All in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and the law department will prepare that legislation for your review at the next meeting.
Mr. Mayor, there's one other aspect of that, which Mr. Aller, I'm sure, noted in the meeting, and that is that there's information in the traffic study that he did related to specifically the parking situation at Lourdes. Am I right, Mr. Aller?
That's correct.
And he indicated that he could pull that out for us ahead of the vote on the 18th, so we would remind him to do that.
Very good. If we are done with the discussion of the committee of the whole meeting, let the record show that Mr. Hanem and President of Council are returning to the table for discussion of the next item. We're ready to move on to agenda item 7. President James Ike, who has addressed us previously about the Flower Hospital lighting issue, has requested to be on the agenda, and we welcome you back to our council room. Please come up, Mr. Ike, and I believe you're bringing your wife with you. Welcome.
Thank you. I bring my wife Nancy because my hearing is not the best in the world. And so if you've got a question for me, she's going to help me. All right.
Certainly.
Of course, she's a moral support. I admit that.
That is reason enough to be
okay. But, yeah, well, I'm back again. I'm not sure you want me to be here, but this issue is not going to go away for us. We have to live with the results of your decisions, and we have to face it every day. In the winter time, we're going to have 15 hours of these LED lights, you know, from dusk to dawn. And they really are bothersome. And you made a decision. To us, we're greatly disappointed, tremendously disappointed. All right, I was hoping we'd get more out of you, but that was your decision. I do want to thank you for your deliberations. You took it seriously and you spent time with this issue. So, This morning, I went down to Haroon Park with my grandson on our bikes, and he's just 10, and he loved the park. You know, he did a fantastic job. It's just beautiful, and the bridge there is a nice color. It fits in with the environment. You know, the path by the hotel is tremendous. He did a fantastic job. So you guys do a lot of things right. I acknowledge that. Most things you probably do right. But I think on this issue, you got it wrong as far as the LED lights on Flower Hospital. Bill Sanford was kind enough to come by and give me the minutes to the meeting that you had concerning this matter. And what he said was that you had no reason to switch these lights off. And my answer to him was that I gave you 40 reasons to do that from your own ordinances, from your own codes. And you chosen to rule against the little guys, the little residential guys out there. I'm just thinking there about the Lord's College. If they go ahead and they get their plans with the stadium, and they put, you know, you put the green LED lights on that, would there be some strength of feeling caused by such an enactment? They'd be piling in here again. I don't think you would dare do that. So I'm still here to fight, and I believe it's not a Sylvania issue, it's a Toledo issue. I've gone around to the residents at St. Luke's, took my signs out there, talked to a lot of people on both sides of that hospital, and the people hated it. Nobody was asked, it was just done, it was imposed on them. And one resident who lives opposite this hospital, he's got no trees in front of his house, and the light just comes right into their house, in the upstairs, in the living room. And the wife was tremendously upset. She said, at nighttime, our carpets change color. It gets a green glow on the carpet. So it's they hate them. It's a national issue. It's an international issue, light pollution. One country has a Clean Neighborhood and Environment Act they put in place in 2005. And they made intrusive lighting a statutory nuisance, something for which conservatives and astronomers have campaigned for more than a decade. This will allow local council environmental health officers to act against the worst kinds of local light pollution, blighting people's lives and disturbing their sleep. My son Andrew is staying with us right now. They're in transition to Georgia. They got a house in Toledo, and all their stuff's en route. And Andrew's staying there with his wife, and their bedroom's at the front of the house. And he said at nighttime, he lifts his hands up, and his hands take on a white glow from the signs at the top. They've already got all the size LED lights at the front we've got to put up with. And it just comes right through closed blinds. And my granddaughter Destiny, she's just 11. She's sleeping in the living room just because of the room. And she says she can't sleep at nights because of the lights. I said, "Do you have the blinds closed?" She said, "Yes, they're closed, but it still comes through." So, how many of you would love these signs, these lights, in your front yard? I don't think any of you would. Would you like them to intrude into your house, into your living rooms, into your bedrooms? I don't think you would vote for that. Now, look at the lights that are on Haroon Road, the sodium lights. It's strange, really, because the city at one time took care about what they put up there. They put low-intensity sodium lights that are nighttime friendly, so you can still see the stars. So then to allow the room to get away with what they have, it's a contradiction. There's a case going right through to the Supreme Court right now where a woman buried her husband in the backyard. Okay, she probably got a large yard. And the city opposed her, said, "You can't do that." She'd already done it. So they said, you can't, you've got to get him out of there. And it's gone all the way to the Supreme Court, and the city argument is that it's not in the code, you can't bury someone in the backyard. But therefore, because not in the code, you're not allowed to do it. But, so the same thing here is not, we don't have proper code in place for LED lights. And you could say, because it's not covered, you can't do this. Now, Flower Hospital is probably the highest building in Sylvania. And you, we're proud of it being called Tree City, right?
Absolutely.
And they're the highest building. We've got LED lighting, green awful lighting, that, with a casino illumination. And that's not a good sign for Sylvania Tree City. Now, ProMedica, when we approached them about this, they said they would give us window coverings. And she actually, Pam, who's the VP over at Flower, said it on, in front of the camera that they offered us free window coverings. Now, to me, that's an admission. There's something wrong that they have to give people free window coverings. Something's not right here. I come to the main argument. I'm not going to be that long with your time, not like last time, so don't worry about that. But define a sign. Doug, you said it last time that when's a sign a sign?
Okay. It's a sign.
And it wraps a lot around that, the argument. And so we have to define a sign. And I'm going to quote the city code, and I'm going to quote the what you put into your minutes on May 17th. You've used this in your arguments. You used it to justify your decision, and you've got to keep in mind, no permit was given for these green tube signs. Nothing. And this is from your SCO section 1167.07, standards for permitted signs. Sign. Any letters, parts of letters, words, figures, numerals, emblems, devices, designs, displays, drawings, trademarks, posters, handbills, or any other objects which, one, are designed, intended, or used to advertise or make known, designate, or attract attention to any person or anything, such as a person, place, event, product, or business. Two, are visible to persons located outdoors and are capable of attracting the attention of such persons. A sign shall include any supporting structure or equipment used to display the sign face. ProMedica say that no green tube lights are there as advertising, they're for branding. That's their own statements. So clearly, they are a sign. And let me say that again, they are a sign. Absolutely. So let's define the problem. One, either it's a massive failure on the part of Sylvania to enforce local codes. A massive failure on the part of Sylvania to enforce local codes. Or two, ProMedica deliberately deceived the Board of Architectural Review about the intended modifications. And if you look at the letter that the lawyers sent to the city council, arguing how these lights are going to be and how nice they're going to be and all the rest of it, it's totally so weak, it's not true. So I'm not sure which one of these is going to be, whether it's ProMedica or it was the city. But a two-year-old coming, sitting in the back seat of the mother's car, and they come up to Flower Hospital, oh, there's the hospital. When they see the green lights, they recognize that. A two-year-old would know that this is a sign that they're at Flower Hospital. So if a two-year-old can recognize that as a sign, why can't we adults? So either way, the city of Sylvania must fix it. ProMedica did not spend tens of thousands of dollars to enhance the look of their buildings. ProMedica understands the power of branding and advertising, just like McDonald's is recognized around the world. Right now, LED signs, they're novelty, they're new. in 15 years, they'll probably be considered tacky. And I'm going to quote your conclusion on the matter from your minutes on May 17. And you say that, although the contractor obtained a building permit from the Lucas County Building Regulations, they did not request or obtain a zoning certificate under this code section. Conclusion of the Service Department and its Zoning Department, the lighting installed on the top of the Flower Hospital building is not a sign as defined under the Sylvania Sign Code. The light that generates from the green LED light band at the intensities presently displays does not constitute a sign. Is that what the intensity presently displays? We had them reduced to 50%. Okay, but you, so you're kind of quoting from that. This is after the, oh, you put them at 100%. So, what? This is really not true. It's really disingenuous. And then your summary. You see, the zoning department, together with the director of public services, have determined for the lighting illumination along and around the top of the Flower Hospital building does not constitute a sign as defined under the section 0166.04, what I just quoted. Therefore, Flower Hospital Pro Medica was not required to obtain a certificate of appropriateness under the City of Sylvania's codified ordinances. You reneged on that. I mean, you said at the conclusion here, this determination was based upon the existing reduced level of illumination of the lighting from its original installation intensity. You already told them to go ahead, and we protested, they reduced it, and you said you're kind of, you know, fast forward, we're going to go with this now. And that's after the fact. You're admitting it's a problem. It's a flawed argument. They installed it at 100% and that clearly violated the code. Whether it was 100%, whether it's 40%, whether it's 50%, it's still the sign and it's still branding. It's still light pollution, it's still tacky, and you're setting a dangerous precedent. You open the door wide to all these commercials doing whatever they want to do with LED signs. They're going to have a field day. Oh, you know, Sylvania City Council, they're a walkover. We can put it up there, it doesn't matter. So I'm going to define the solution again, which I said last time, is to remove the green signs and ask again that you create an ordinance against LED signs like this. My granddaughter Destiny, 11 years, I told you, is here now. She said to take granddad, tell them you are not going to give up. So I'm not going to give up. You know, I've looked for other recourses, so the channels we can go down. You know, it's not totally surprising the decision you made, but we'll press on. We're not going to give up. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Eich. We appreciate you coming back and speaking your mind. I was told there was another person in the House that wanted to address this issue. Is that true? Seeing no hands, over here.
My name is John Reitmeier. I live on Arun Road. Unlike maybe Mr. Eich, my house sits back quite a ways from the road. But the lighting itself, it doesn't have an effect on my life, my way of living in any manner that, you know, thus far. This time of year with all the leaves and on the trees, at the hospital and in front of my house, I barely notice around. Now in the winter time, yeah, you can see them, but pretty much I don't have a whole lot of windows in the front of my home either. But just driving in and out or driving up and down the road, I don't really have a problem with that. I think that the good neighbor that Flower Hospital is, and what they, you know, do for the community, and what they, on how nice they, you know, they keep their property. I don't really see what the real big problem is with it.
Thank you also for your comments.
Do you work for ProMedica?
As you can appreciate, we've had a number of discussions in our living room about this issue. And one of our neighbors, he presented, I think, a very strong point where he said, like when the cancer part was built, you know, when the Flower Hospital brought on the new additions, they were very, you know, they said, we are going to maintain the beautiful park-like setting. You know, Flower Hospital is set far enough behind, you know, away from the road. We've got plenty of room to expand. And so we appreciate that. And we love it. We love the park-like setting that's outside our house. I love being where we are. And they were quite insistent. They said, we're not going to be commercial. We're not going to give that commercial effect, and we're not going to, you know, kind of bring that along Haroon Road. But what happens after dark, which maybe they weren't even aware of when they put this into the plans, after dark, the lights do come right onto the street. You know, it's like having a BP station across the street. That's the effect it is. You know, those are the things, and those are commercial. Those are zoned commercially, but a hospital in no way is zoned commercially. And so that's what it's brought to Haroon Road. And I know that over the years, it's been, you know, from time to time, there have been people maybe wanting to take on the homes that are on Haroon Road and maybe start a business there, but it's been strong, very strong. No, we don't want to become commercial. We don't want to become commercial. We're residential. And so that's the heart of what's behind it. You know, it's surprising. My husband and I did some riding around in the car, and you go across 23, you know, 475, and you see those lights from the hill across the road. I mean, and if you're driving down Monroe, you see them. You know, that's the impact. It's an amazing impact on the community. Even though, I mean, obviously we're right across the street from it, so it affects us the most. But anybody, you know, it's an effect. It's the impact of what is Sylvania, what is our community. You know, who are we as a community? And my granddaughter, she was just taken down to see the casino in Toledo, and she said, I never knew what a casino looked like. But she says, now I know what Grandpa means when he said, you know, the hospital looks like a casino. So that was her comment there, too. Those are just some thoughts.
Thank you, Mrs. Eich. Seeing no other hands, Mrs. Cappellini. Oh, I'm sorry. Come on up.
Hi, my name's Molly. I've only lived in the area for about a year and a half.
Can you give us your last name and your address?
Yes, I live on Oakland Court, which is the road that's parallel to Ravine. So I'm directly across the street from the entrance to Flower Hospital. I've only lived there a year and a half. I'm from the Cleveland area originally. And one of the things that drew me to the area was the beauty, the seclusion that we have down that street, the large trees, the fact that we even went there at nighttime to look at the stars, because I came from a city where we had a stadium built, it was a AAA stadium or something like that, kind of baseball stadium that was built right on the other side of the highway that I lived at. We couldn't see the stars, we couldn't hear the birds very well at nighttime because of all of the highway traffic. Now, we do put up with the noise pollution that we get from Flower Hospital with all the sirens and things. And that's something that we've just come to agree with. We did buy a house across from the hospital, but now with LED lights, now we have some of the light pollution coming in as well. It does come in my daughter's bedroom window. And it's displeasing to the eye. I'm concerned about the residents in the area. They're discontented with it. And it worries me about what will happen if they decide to, if Mr. Eich decides to move, and who will take on that property afterwards? Will it still retain its same value? Will that those property values around the area trickle down into my street and decrease my values, property value? So those are some of my concerns and why I'm here today to support Mr. Ike. And I fully agree with everything that he mentioned tonight. He's dug into this very deeply, bringing up points that I did think about along the way, but just was not prepared to articulate them like Mr. Ike. So I just wanted to say my opinion about it, and that I am a resident of the city. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mrs. Capellini.
So I drove down Haroon and last night, and I walked in your neighborhood, and I drove down probably your street, Molly. And when you drive into it, it's really dark and quiet, and there's big trees, and it's quaint. And then you go around the cul-de-sac, and you come back, and it's a jolt. I mean, it really is. It's that I feel like we have, and there's been a grave mistake that's been made. I agree with you. I mean, it is a sign. It's permanently changed the tone of that neighborhood. I mean, our little problem is this letter from their lawyer. I mean, at some point, they got the impression from our administration that it was okay. And at this point, I don't know what we can do. I mean, is there a recourse? I agree with these people. But I'm not sure where we go from here. Will Woodflower take them down? I don't know. Or turn them off?
The law director has determined that the answer to that is no, they will not. We have spoken to them, and that is not an option without legal action, and I'm not sure that we would be successful in that. Mr. Ike came to us originally with two different charges. One was to get the lights off, and he reiterated that tonight. The second is to change our code to make it clearly against the rules to have that sort of lighting. And I don't believe that's been referred to the zoning committee yet, but you might want to take that action. And perhaps during the course of that, we'll find a way to handle this problem.
Well, I stated in our last meeting, I think the code is clear and that this is a sign, this lighting is a sign. So I would like, rather than referring it to us, I'd like to hear from the administration what kind of language you would want that would be clearer than what we have already written.
I think that would be what I have heard is in Perrysburg. They have a ProMedica facility at the corner of US or Ohio 25 and I-475, and they evidently have a sentence or two that says, buildings shall not be outlined in lights. That seems quite clear.
Seems to me quite clear. Numerals, emblems, devices, designs, displays, or any objects which are designed, intended, or used to advertise or make known, designate, or attract attention to any person or anything that are visible to persons located outdoors and are capable of attracting the attention of such persons. I mean, I'm disappointed with this interpretation. Mr. Ike, I want to make sure you understand that this is not a decision that council has made. This is a decision that's been made by the administration. This is not consistent with my understanding of the code that we passed. I'm not judging the lighting itself. I'm pro or con. My concern here is the process, that there was no process, and I think they were required to go through the process. We may have granted them a sign anyway, but they didn't go through the process, and that's the issue that I think is before you and before us. And I'm sorry about your situation. Our council is powerless to do anything for you. We are a legislative body. The administration is our executive body. They enforce the laws that we write. I think our law is clear. I think it's unfortunate that we're in the situation we're in.
Can I ask a question?
You need to come up to the podium and tell us who you are.
I'm Andrew Ike, Jim Ike's son. From what I read, I think what they spent on lighting was like 50,000 materials. That's absolutely nothing in ProMedica. That's one knee surgery. It's nothing. But to these neighbors who live there, it's everything, and it's permanent. So if you're afraid of ProMedica for $50,000, one of the biggest hospitals out there, that's insane. So I think there's more that you can do about this. The other thing I saw was on the plans, nothing was said about the lights. They showed the signs. They showed it in daylight. I think they misled the administration. Whatever they told you was misleading. Make them pay for that mistake.
They clearly did not go through the process. The planning commission did not.
Why penalize the residents?
And that's a question I have. I'm not a lawyer, but what recourse do we have for the process not being followed?
It's not fair to leave it against the residents and do it in the hospital's favor.
If I may throw a couple of comments on this that might clarify some things for you, is Mr. Ike made a comment that that perhaps Flower Hospital misled the Board of Architectural Control on this issue. This issue never came before the Board of Architectural Control. Some of the meeting notes that Mr. Ike asked about were for various signs that Flower Hospital applied for. One was one process, one review was for the signs that were placed on the building. And in that application, there was no reference whatsoever to lighting. They referenced strictly the signs that were ultimately approved with some modifications. There was another hearing before the Board of Architectural Review for another sign, which is the sign out at Haroon Road. And likewise, that was not on the agenda for review. So the Board of Architectural Review never had it before it. So to that extent, that's just one of the factors you need to keep in mind. I think what happened, and what I was charged with doing, just make sure on what my memorandum was for, was to go back and be able to explain to City Council what happened on a factual basis. So I gave a background summary of what happened and what didn't happen. And what's in there, I think, accurately reflects what did take place. And nowhere in there you'll find the Board of Architectural Review hearing or should have gone to them. Because early on, the only thing that I was able to determine code-wise that the hospital did not do was they did not get a zoning certificate. And I think that was in part predicated upon the letter exchange and the phone calls that are detailed in my memorandum where they thought they didn't need to. They should have. That's a technical issue, but the more important determination was early on, the zoning department and then ultimately the service department determined that since it's not a sign, the process was not sidestepped because the process was not needed to be engaged, because their determination was based upon the facts and applying the code, it wasn't a sign. So we have to sort of be careful on what did happen and what didn't happen. Folks can have different interpretations of whether it's a sign or not. I would agree with Mr. Hanum's contention that I think our code is written and covers well the issue of what a sign is or a sign isn't. The definition's pretty good. The problem here is how people apply the facts, which is the lighting that you see there, and then say, is that a sign or is that not a sign under our code? People can have different interpretations. Some can say that it is, others say that it is not. Our service department has maintained from the beginning that it's not a sign, does not meet that definition. Others could disagree. And what I do is reflect what we determined it to be. And the summary clause, which indicates that based upon the intensity of the lights, it doesn't reach that level for a definition of a sign. I think, you know, the zoning department can speak for itself, but just want to clarify a couple of the factors there. I do think that had we had the additional language in our code that, addressed LED lighting around the building, this would not have occurred. We don't have that in our code. I think that's something that we're going to come back and recommend that we do have in our code. And that will address issues going forward. But I just want to give that clarification. I can respond to some of the questions that might follow, but that's, I just want to make sure that you're aware of that.
Mr. Mayor.
Mrs. Hussman.
To be perfectly clear, did the sign, the white lighting, that sign come to Board of Architectural Review?
I believe it did, yes.
Okay, and they approved that?
Yes.
Okay, in our code, and I cannot remember, is there something about lumens or how bright a sign can be, or the white sign, I think I hear, is obtrusive as well, and I know that from personal experience in my own house. So what I, and maybe that means I have to pull back, right? But I'm not going to right now. I'm going to finish up. What I'm wondering is, we got them to reduce the brightness of the LEDs, and that's another issue we can address in, about an exact amount, you know, or exact numbers, what we should say about LED lighting. But the brightness of that large sign on both sides of the hospital, I'm on the opposite side, I'm not sure it should be as bright as it is. And I don't know if in our code, Doug, I don't know if you remember, if it, we addressed the brightness of light that is shining in lumens, or it's a big sign and it's very bright. Can we get them to turn,
like,
right?
I want to see if Mr. Aller has any input on that.
Mayor, if it's okay, I'll address the large issue.
Sure.
The question seems to be, how do we determine that it's not a signed? I think the phrasing that everybody kind of keeps going to in our code is anything that draws attention. Well, that is a very broad brush. And any business, any operation, everything they do is to draw attention. We have several other businesses in town that have done things to draw attention. Rite Aid has the entire sides of their buildings painted blue. That's to draw attention. That's so people know that that's a Rite Aid.
But they are commercial.
McDonald's restaurants, their roof is painted red, and the stripes coming down are yellow. That's to draw attention. Walgreens has a red roof. That's to draw attention, so you know it's a Walgreens. There are several others that do that. And to say that, well, it draws attention, so it's a sign, is much too broad of a stroke. We've allowed it. The new Dave White just painted their roof Chevy blue. That's to draw attention. And that one phrase does not make something a sign. As far as the lighting is concerned, I think the lighting, the fact that other cities have put specific language in to address this type of lighting, and that language is not within the sign section of their codes. It's in a completely different section. They've acknowledged that it's not part of the sign. They're trying to address it as a lighting situation. And I think that that's what needs to be done. We don't have that type of language. In answer to the question regarding lumens or strength of the light, I don't recall that there's anything in there as far as direct lumens. Where the lighting comes into play is does it infringe upon the adjoining property? Infringe means, does it, if you had closed curtains and the room is pitch black and you open those curtains and that light changes that room, that's infringement. The lights at the level that they are today do that. Whether the large white sign does, that's something, frankly, that I would have to check. I haven't looked at that particular sign.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, this has been a frustrating conversation, right? I have tremendous empathy for our neighbors here. I absolutely understand what they're saying. I have no question. You know, we spent an hour and 45 minutes before you all came here talking about the new arena at Lord's College, right? And I have every reason to believe that the Flower Hospital lights are much more intrusive on your homes than the Lord's project ever will be to those neighbors. Yet we hear that we can't do anything about it. I guess there are two things, though, that we might be able to do. One is to, without question, put into our sign code the language that Perrysburg has in its code. The zoning code, fine. And Mr. Hanum, I don't know what we need to do as a council to get your committee to consider that.
I would like to see from the administration the language, the specific language that they would like.
And if that takes a request.
And in fact, that's what I intend to move.
Okay, well, let's do that, because, you know, I guess we're being asked to accept the fact that we can't do anything retroactively on ProMedica, but we certainly do something to keep it from happening again. This is a commercial enterprise, the people that make these signs, and they make money from putting them on buildings. So I think we need to make it clear that Sylvania is not open for that kind of business anymore. So, Doug, if you're willing to do that, I appreciate that. I would ask Mr. Moen whether there's any leverage at all that we have with Flower any longer to try to get some accommodation from these folks. The things that come to my mind would be to ask them to limit the hours of this sign. I don't think it's inappropriate at all to ask them to turn the lights off at bedtime, right? So that we don't have people having to put up blackout curtains on their homes to keep the light out. I think that's an intrusion into somebody's privacy. So are you telling us that we don't have any ability to go back and have an additional conversation with them?
I haven't said that.
Okay.
I do think that one of the things that is implicit in the summary was that I think Flower should be in a position to provide us some assurance in a formal way as to the intensity of the lights that they have on the building. They intend to use it. It looks like they have the ability to ramp it up mm-hmm. and ramp it down. So we need to have a discussion with them to confirm the level and intensity that the light emits. Because I think what I'm hearing from the service department is that intensity is not illumination, but it is not a violation of our code because it does not intrude. So we have to get that reduced and agreed on. The other aspects of it, we have the dialogue and the opportunity to talk with them.
Yeah, here's what I'd like to ask. Because I think that unlike St. Luke's, which is not in a residential neighborhood, it's in a commercial area, unlike Mr. Aller, the Jim White people or the McDonald's people, those are in commercially zoned areas. This is not, right? I think even the Toledo Hospital lights are much higher up over that neighborhood than our Flower Hospital lights, right? They're 10 or 12 or 15 floors up over that West Toledo neighborhood over there. So this may be a unique impact that we're having to deal with here. So what I'd like to ask specifically, Mr. Moen, is if you could give a little more consideration to this and come back to council next time with the report, not on what we can't do, but what we can do with them, whether that's jawboning them, whether that's some sort of legal action. I would like to have some sort of proactivity out of the administration in terms of what we can do, including very specifically them turning the lights off at, pick a number, 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night, you know, I can't imagine that the branding that they're doing has any impact on the long-haul truck drivers that are going by at 2 in the morning on US 23, right? So let's see what we can do to get them either through legal means or coercion or discussion to back off a little bit.
And council always has the opportunity, and you can wait for Mr. Moen's input or not, but you can always pass a resolution or have a letter justified back to Flower Hospital and ProMedica saying you don't approve of this.
Right, well.
That you encourage them to turn them off, or at least to limit the hours.
Yeah, and that's
you have that right, yeah. You can lobby.
Yeah, and that's another.
And we'll have an impact
right,
on
it. And that's sure. Another recourse that I'm going to choose to have privately in a discussion with the neighbors. I mean, I think there are some things that they can do from a lobbying standpoint, not here, but over on Richards Road, and I would encourage them to do that.
Mr. Milner.
I hear what Mr. Aller is saying about the broad brush and about branding, and I get that, but I have to agree with Mr. Hanum that it seems to me that when we're talking about illumination, that's a different standard than the color of paint that's put on Dave White's roof or the color of paint that is used at Walgreens, because that is not affecting the neighbors. And so I guess I'm not a lawyer, but I'm very confused about this, because it seems to me like we're talking apples and oranges here. And I guess anything you can do to help me try to understand that, I don't get that.
We will do that. Any further discussion at this time? Mr. Haddad, you're not a city resident. You have input on this issue.
I own property in the city.
Come on up.
Kevin Haddad, Sylvania Township Trustee. I own property at Fox Hall Village. Example is going to be if this thing passes council for Lord's College, are they going to have illumination that's going to be bright enough to get the residents upset in that neighborhood too? So something needs to be done before you guys go on with that project too. Thank you.
Mr. Lubell, I believe.
Hello, I'm Bob Lubell, 5101 Haroon Road. I wasn't planning on speaking tonight, but Mr. Wilkie made an interesting comment that I thought I wanted to comment about. We both come from the same roots. His father introduced me to advertising nearly 40 years ago. So, and I worked for many years at an ad agency and spent time with branding, including with ProMedica. And the most interesting thing that I've heard tonight has to do with impact. If ProMedica had chosen to use an alteration of lighting for their building, let's say flipping from red to green to purple to blue, we'd call that architectural decoration. But it does not take a degree in architecture or an understanding of marketing, or even being more than 10 years old to realize that the color they've chosen reflects a very long coordinated campaign that unfortunately I can say that I worked in the committee that chose that green. Because Toledo Hospital was blue when that was the case, and Mr. Wilkie can comment that the Mercy wanted to be blue. So ProMedica became green. So it's their color. It's their mark, it's their brand, it's their symbol. Now there's a lot of legal here that I can't address. But what I believe I can address is the aspect of what they're trying to achieve, in my opinion, which is addressing their market and delivering their message. And I think there's a time of day in which delivering their message, they have an audience. And Mr. Aller can talk about the audience, and that's the traffic load on Haroon Road. How many impressions they're making during a certain period of time. Now we know from television and radio and newspapers that impressions are how advertising sold. The number of eyes that see it count the value of the impressions and how much you can sell it for. But as Mr. Lepke pointed out, there's a certain point at night that the audience drops significantly, and the audience remains only those people who are living with an eyesight. because if Mr. Aller can comment, the traffic on Haroon Road, once 10 o'clock or so comes along, really is the few people who are visiting the hospital, those folks going home in the neighborhood, but the passers-by drop exponentially, that you could probably sit in Haroon Road at 2 in the morning and not get hit by a car. So the concept of reducing the lights to zero, if that's the best decision, after ProMedica no longer meets the need to sell their product and allows us to sleep, and then goes back in business of reaching out to their populace once daylight comes back, seems to be possibly the most fair decision, that they do their business during their hours and we have our homes at night. Thank you.
Good suggestion. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I think it needs to be said, you know, all of us, I'm sure, have had conversations with ProMedica leadership over the years, and certainly over the last couple of years. And my impression is, genuinely, these are people who want to be good neighbors. So I guess I want to maybe ask, among the things that Mr. Moon considers, what a logical approach might be to talking and engaging the management and the leadership, the board leadership even, the medical staff leadership of ProMedica, to make sure that they're aware of the dissatisfaction that our neighbors and this council has with this 24/7 lighting that they have on the building, and see if, just out of a sense of community-mindedness, they would be willing to accommodate us a bit more. Community-mindedness is good business. They know that, and I think they believe it actually in their core. So maybe, you know, among other things, it would be helpful to reach out to them that way. I don't know, Mayor, your suggestion of the city drafting a letter, or council directing the administration to draft a letter, might be a good first step in that regard.
I think that the people at Flower Hospital certainly know that the neighbors don't like it. They've met with them. However, city council adds the influence and support of city council that these lights go too far, that they need to be limited or turned off, they're going to have to take another look at it.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering whether Mr. Ostra or Mr. Peterson or some of the people who run the parent company really understand that.
I don't know.
You know, has this attitude, our feelings, very strong feelings, trickled up the chain of command.
It needs to trickle up. My discussions with Flower Hospital president leads me to believe that it needs to trickle up above him,
yes,
to make that decision. This, yes, is a corporate decision.
So what would be appropriate from council to direct the administration to maybe make that overture?
I think perhaps to get back to you with our recommendations. We're not ready to do that.
Okay.
We've heard that council has concerns about it, so we'll find a proper response and a path for that response and get back to you.
Yeah. I think that's appropriate.
Not promise success, but we'll certainly get somebody's attention.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Hainem.
I would, I think this LED lighting constitutes, and it's not the attention, it constitutes a device designed to advertise, make known, designate, or attract attention. It's a device. It's not that it attracts attention. It's not a painting, that's painting the wall. This is a specific device. I think it is clearly within our current definition of sign. What I would request is that the administration bring back to the council for us to consider in our zoning administration, or in our zoning committee, the types of changes to our code that you think we need, that you would enforce, so that we don't have this situation again, and so that every building in Sylvania doesn't end up with LED lighting around the top of it. Frankly, I'd really like you to go back and think about the language that we have. I don't know. I know the decision that this wasn't a sign wasn't made in the law department. I mean, this decision was made according to Mr. Dombey's letter of June of 2011 was made very informally. I don't think it was probably not made with a lot of reflection, and we've been tied to that decision from a year ago. So I would urge you to reconsider this. I think you still have the power. We still have the power to enforce our code as written. And I think the code is written, and again, this has not, I'm not commenting on the effect. I know I've heard the comments about the effect, but what I'm really commenting on is the process and the need to get a permit. If you're going to build a device that's designed and intended and used to advertise or make known, designate, or attract attention to a building. I mean, that's the language that we have in here now. So I urge you to step back and reconsider that. And apart from that, I would also request that you propose to us the legislation which we could consider and adopt, which you would enforce to prevent this from happening again. Because I think we got it. Obviously, there's some concern about it.
If that was a motion, I'll second it.
All right. Margie, you have that as a motion. And Mr. Lukey, I don't know whether what you requested is part of that motion. I'm not sure.
Roll it all up to a single motion.
Yeah, I'm not.
That we ask the administration to take all steps necessary to communicate with the pro-medical leadership. Provide legal and other recommendations on what other steps council could take, and provide language for the zoning annexation committee to begin considering modifying the zoning code.
And revisiting the current legal wording of the code.
So,
Mr. Hainem, do you accept that?
I accept that. Absolutely. Thank you.
And Mrs. Capolini, do you accept that as what you seconded? All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all for your input. We'll continue to work on this issue. We're now going to move on to agenda item 6, which is proposed ordinance 34-2012. This is entered into agreements with our Safety City personnel. Safety City is our kindergarten level program where we have children come in for basic education for crossing the street, not crossing railroad tracks, what to do with electric lines, all those educational things to help children as they leave their homes. This is Westfall, ordinance 34-2012.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. All members of, I'd like to introduce ordinance number 34-2012. Members of council, having received copies in advance, I'll read by title only, authorizing the mayor and director of finance to enter into agreements with the head teacher, teachers, and aides for the Sylvania Safety City program being conducted by the Sylvania Division of Police, providing funds therefore, waiving the second and third readings and declaring an emergency.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that ordinance number 34-2012 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
I move final passage of ordinance number 34-2012.
Second.
Moved and seconded for final passage of ordinance 34-2012 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and ordinance 34-2012 is approved. Moving on to agenda item 7. We have two added items there. Item 7A is a report from the Safety Committee. Mrs. Westfall.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On May 24th, we had a Safety Committee meeting to discuss the school resource officer. Present at the meeting were myself, Mike Brown, Doug Hainem, and Todd Milner, all of the committee members, as well as Sandy Hessman, Katie Capellini, Chief Rodas, and guest Bob Verhelst, who is the Director of Student Services and the Safety Resource Officer Director at the school system. Chief Rodas began and gave an overview of the current situation and also highlighted comparison with 11 other area school districts. He also gave an activity report indicating the level of activity that the school resource officers have been involved in at the schools. Bob Verhaus from the school system spoke about the importance of the school resource officers in the school. Doug Hanum identified the school resource officers as a potential cost-cutting opportunity. And after a great deal of discussion, the group determined that Chief Rodas would talk with the schools about the possibility of absorbing more of the cost of the school resource officers and also examining other funding options. Also, I think it's important to mention that all the council members, Mr. Brown and Mr. Milner, expressed interest in cutting that, and Mrs. Capellini actually, expressed interest in cutting non-safety, making non-safety cuts first as we begin to explore cost-cutting opportunities with regard to the budget.
Thank you. Questions for Mrs. Westfall's report?
I don't have any questions, a further comment. I think I acknowledged during the course of the meeting the value of the school resource officers and the and I made the comment that in our current budget situation, I don't think we're looking to cut waste, fraud, and abuse from our budget, because I don't think we have waste, fraud, and abuse in our budget. I think we have a very efficient and lean budget, but that doesn't change the fact that in 2012 and 2013, we are currently projected, and we may not get there, may not happen, but we are currently projecting spending $6 million more than we are anticipating in revenue. I agree that we need to look at everything, and I have no more interest in cutting public safety or officers than anybody else. What I'm suggesting is that, having heard Mr. Chief Rodas's report, I think it is worth, at our previous committee of the whole, that it is worth and important that we not take anything off the table in looking at our budget. School resource officers are something that we didn't have much of before a decade or so ago. A number of communities do not have them currently. Doesn't mean they're not doing a good job and not performing a valuable service today, but I think as we go forward, we need to keep those, keep that on the table and understand that that may be a place where we're not, where we may not want to act, but we may have to if we want to address our budget situation. And I still feel that way, that this is one of the items we have to look at. I think it's a good idea to ask the schools to pick up a greater share of the cost. One of the things we heard in Chief Rodas's report was that a number of communities, the school systems pay 100% of the cost of school resource officers. And I think that is worth continuing to pursue. So that would be my comments on the report, which otherwise I think was, which I think was entirely accurate.
Any further comments? All right, thank you. And agenda item 7B was a report of the Conservation Corps.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This year, the Conservation Corps will start on June 19th, so I thought it was appropriate to share with you a little bit of an update. This is their 19th year. There have been over 500 12 to 14-year-old Sylvania Junior High School students that have participated over the years. The program is a learn and earn experience focused on conservation, environmental improvement, forestry, birding, landscaping, tree planting, blooming, summer flower planting, and over 10,000 plantings have happened every year, and all of the planting items have been contributed. And so it is a city beautification program. 15 to 20 sites are improved each year, and the culmination of the program always closes with the river ball race and a picnic, and this year that will be held on Saturday, July 14th. So just to give you an update of the good things happening, and I'd encourage you to keep your eyes open for the beautiful the beautification efforts of this group. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I made a major mistake by not adding a report of the Economic Development Subcommittee.
Let's do it right.
If we could, because every member of council and you were there, so I probably am not going to escape detection for very long about not making a report. The Economic Development Subcommittee met on May 24th at 8 in the morning to discuss specifically two items. One, a presentation by Mr. Moan, who outlined the new terms for Community Reinvestment Act Areas 3 and 8. We've got some CRA regulations that are somewhat out of date. The committee, subcommittee rather, expressed general support for this approach. Committee members were asked to individually give additional input to Mr. Moan on the ideas about CRA 3 and 8. And we were agreed that we would contact Superintendent Rieger at the schools to brief him and his treasurer about what we have in mind. That meeting actually is going to take place tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. So we're moving forward with that. The second piece was a quick summary of the downtown study by Mr. Sanford. And Margie, this is very important. We agreed to schedule a community meeting to present the results on June 11th at 7 p.m. We want to make that fundamentally a public hearing or a public meeting. I think Mr. Sanford's already moved forward to promote that, and so we need to notice it and broaden out the awareness of it. So that was the essence of that Economic Development Subcommittee meeting. Sorry about the confusion.
Oh, no problem. Thank you. Any further committee reports to be made at this time? Agenda item 8 is committee referrals. Mr. Milner or members of council, anything additional to refer to committee? Hearing none, we'll move on to added agenda item 9, which is a discussion Mr. Hanum has added to the agenda concerning a TARDA withdrawal referendum. Mr. Hanum.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. We have received a report from Mr. Moan previously about a timetable for placing a referendum within the city on our continued participation in TARDA. And we have, as I understand it, a two-year window. I think it would be, I personally believe that it would be appropriate after being in TARDA for almost 40 years for our community to have an opportunity to take advantage of the opportunity that the legislature has provided us and have an up or down vote on our continued presentation or participation in TARDA. I've said before to all of you that my expectation is that our community would choose to remain in TARDA based upon my review of the support that TARDA has received from the City of Sylvania voters over the years. But I do think that that's a decision that ought to be done by vote by all our neighbors rather than a decision by the seven of us on council, assuming that that's what they would select. In terms of looking at the timing for, if we were to go forward with this referendum, I think the ideal timing to do that would be in November of 2012, this November. We can anticipate probably a larger turnout in September of 2012 than at any other, I'm sorry, November of 2012 than at any other regularly scheduled vote, which is anticipated within the two-year window. In fact, we may not have, the only other vote we may have after November 2012 may be in November of 2013, which would coincide with our municipal elections. in order to have the greatest input and the greatest participation, I think it would be preferable to do this, to have this withdrawal referendum, this up or down vote, in November of 2012. And I also understand from Mr. Mohn's memorandum that to do that, we have to act by, I believe, end of the first week of August. We currently have two council meetings scheduled between tonight and the deadline. Now, we can always have additional meetings, and I am not suggesting that we have a vote tonight on whether we should place this item on the ballot. But what I would like to do is, and what I intend to do, is to move that council request the administration to prepare appropriate legislation or an appropriate resolution, whatever mechanism is necessary to place this issue on the ballot, and that we add this to our agenda for our next meeting in June, and anticipate voting up or down on it at our last scheduled meeting before the deadline, which is July, in the one meeting that we currently have scheduled in July. So I know that we have additional due diligence to do on this. I know we're having a meeting Wednesday morning to meet with TARDA folks. I think that's appropriate. And really what I'm talking about is totally apart from that. It is merely to place us as a city council in a position to act in a timely manner to decide up or down, and to get some public input on that prior to the deadline for placing the matter on the November ballot. So with that, I would move that we request the administration to prepare appropriate legislation or a motion, or I guess appropriate legislation to place the matter on the ballot at the November 2012 general election, and that we place this matter on the ballot for our next two council meetings.
Can I make a comment before we have a vote?
Or we need a second.
Or a second, or whatever.
I'll say for the purposes of discussion.
Okay, it's moved and seconded for discussion. Mr. Brown.
Thank you. I would prefer, and I hope all council members would prefer, not to rush into this. Those communities that have rushed into this have found out it's being very difficult for them to supply the service to their citizens. I think it would be a more prudent path, knowing that we have close to, what, 2 years? To act on, or a year and a half to act on this, is to do our due diligence before we come up with a referendum saying, yes, we're going to put it on the ballot. I do not have enough information at the present time myself to make the decision to put it on the ballot, because I'm not sure we can provide an alternative service if the citizens of this community decide. I have no problem with them voting on whether or not they want to be in TARDA or not. But I think it's our responsibility to make sure we have a plan in place in case they do elect not to participate in TARDA, that we have a plan in place that not only gives transportation to those citizens that are handicapped or those citizens that are seniors that don't have a car, but provides transportation for those people that live in other communities that come into our community to work. Now, I don't know if any of you have talked with Lord's University to find out, you know, how much they rely on TARDA. I have. They rely on TARDA greatly. Has any of you talked to Flower Hospital to find out if they rely on TARDA? I have. They do. Have gone down to the Ability Center and, you know, talked to Tim at the Ability Center on, you know, how much they rely on TARDA. I have. We, at the present time, cannot provide any of those facilities the service that they require to get their employees from outside our city into our city to perform work. That's my comment.
Further discussion? Mrs. Westphal.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good comments, Mike. I have you know, a lot of unknowns here. First of all, are there only two dates that we can consider that this year, November and November of 2013, or are there dates in between? Do you know, Mr. Bell?
It would depend upon if there are other elections. Certainly, there are other dates.
Okay.
But
there are no other elections.
And they have
there would have to be either a special election or a primary in our municipal.
Okay. Right. So definitely think we have a responsibility to be clear on an alternate transit system, and I feel reluctant to move forward and put in place something on a ballot before we've got all of our plans in progress and more clear. I also feel like we've got this meeting on June 6th specifically to discuss this, and it seems to me that it would be appropriate to hear some feedback from there and to further explore again the alternate transit opportunities before we move too far forward with this. I do understand, and I'm sensitive, Doug, to your thoughts about that there's only two meetings to make the decision if it's to go on our November ballot, and that is a concern. I'd love to hear other council members' comments. I don't know how we get everything in order to be confident that we're moving in the right direction. I do think it's something that should have community input, and I'm very comfortable to put it on the ballot once we're clear about how we would provide the service.
Absolutely.
Mrs. Westphal, just to clarify, I can call a meeting at any time if needed. We do recess the first meeting in July, and we recess the first meeting in August. Either of those times can be called or another time can be called if necessary business needs to be taken care of.
Clarify again, what's the date, Mr. Painum?
Well, we have a regular scheduled council meeting for July.
Well, what's the requirement to get it on the ballot?
I guess it was in your memo. I think it's August 8th.
Mr. Haddad seems to know that.
I know that information, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Haddad?
Yes.
As I've researched this whole thing since day one, I've been to 90% of the TARDA meetings. I've been working on this issue. It's 90 days before the election that this has to be presented to the Board of Elections for to put out the ballot for November. There are two dates, which is this November and next November. You can hold a special election, but you have to pay for that to put that on. Everybody, like when Perrysburg opted out, when I looked at opting out for the township, it has to be, to get monies and to be able to put on the ballot for transportation, we have to have a regional transit service system in place. So communities have to get together to make a regional transit system. You can't do it as a separate entity to collect funds like that. You could put that on a tax if you want to the city, or a sales tax, or a property tax, or you would be able to do a income tax to pay for transportation if you wanted to do your own in-house service. So I've researched all those things. I have been working with TARDA. I'll explain really brief. The problem with TARDA is twofold. One, they let Jim D take away with too much because the board just says whatever he wants to do. Two, the board is very ineffective. They have not done anything. So I think if we had better members on the board who serve the communities, I think we could fix TARDA in no time. I really do. I think opting out is a good thing if they're not going to try to do something to fix it, but we need to get the system fixed first, and that way we don't have to deal with it anymore. So that's my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Haddad.
Yeah, Mr. Moen's memo of April 27th says that the resolution would have to be passed on or before August 6th in order to be submitted to the Board of Elections prior to August 8th.
General election date is November the 6th.
Mr. Mayor, you know, I'm happy to hear that members of council are taking Doug's proposal seriously. I give him a lot of credit for spending some time thinking at least initially, about the options for a alternative to TARDA. I absolutely strongly believe from a policy position that we shouldn't put anything on the ballot until we have an option to offer our citizens, because I think public transportation is a critical part of a progressive, innovative town, and we need to be able to provide that. I think I agree with Mary that we do have a hearing coming up on Wednesday, and I'm a little uncomfortable asking for legislation without at least having going through that process. I made a note here to see if I could get a representative of Lourdes and a representative of Flower there, because the one piece that I think didn't get addressed in the document that Doug provided to us all on Saturday was the fact that it did a very good job of focusing on the disability community, but it limits, in his plan, a public transportation system in Sylvania to those physically unable to drive a motor vehicle, so, you know, the disabled. I think we need to hear from our employers. I think we need to hear from Lourdes in order to flesh that out and hear what might suit them. That's going to take a little time. I don't think we need to totally bake the cake, but I think we need to hear what needs to go into it. So I guess I support to some degree the concept that Doug is presenting. I just think we're maybe 2 weeks early, and if we're all willing as a council to have some extra council meetings to address it as comprehensively as we can, I propose we wait for 2 weeks, get past our meeting on Wednesday, and have the same conversation on the 18th.
Further discussion? There is a motion on the floor. Mrs. Capellini, are you leaning forward to make a comment?
I was just going to say I support Mark and Mary and Mike. I mean, there's no sense rushing into it. We really need to, especially if we have another year, we really have to figure out.
No, I'm not saying that we wait a year. I'm saying that we act deliberately in the next 2 weeks to see if we can get some more answers.
But we need to have something in place. You can't just say, here's your choice to opt out and then have nothing. Right.
I mean, you know, communities have embarrassed themselves by talking bravely about alternative transportation systems, and then at the end of the day, they can't come up with
exactly.
Right, so I think we owe it to our citizens to be serious-minded about this.
Let me just say that I think all the arguments you make are absolutely valid. Okay. I think we need public transportation in the city of Sylvania. I just think we ought to vote on it. And I think we've been in it for 40 years. We have a limited opportunity. I think you all made very convincing arguments. I think Lourdes would make a convincing argument, as would the Ability Center, and as would Flower for it. I think the appropriate body to make those arguments to, though, isn't to seven isolated members in the city of Sylvania, but to all of citizens. And that's what the legislature has provided for, a very limited window of time to do that. I think we could make a very, here around the table, what I think would be a very strong case for remaining a member of TARDA. I understand that. I think we ought to make that argument. We ought to have that discussion. I think we ought to vote on it in November.
All right, there's a motion and a second on the floor. The motion was, I believe, was to have the law department prepare an ordinance to place this issue on the November 6th ballot.
I think it was appropriate legislation, because I think it's a resolution.
Okay, appropriate resolution. Okay, appropriate legislation and resolution. All in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Clerk needs to call the role.
Can I ask a question?
Certainly.
I'm sorry.
Is it technically we can't request legislation from a committee meeting? Is that accurate?
That's correct.
So we can't request that legislation on Wednesday. We have to wait to our next council meeting?
Technically correct.
By recommendation. You can. Preparing the legislation doesn't mean you have to consider it or vote on it.
But I just think it might lend some thought as to what that legislation should be, potentially.
It's really
pretty simple piece of legislation.
Put it on the ballot. I don't think there's a lot that could serve.
It's not that.
But Jim, a ballot involves creating ballot language, or has the legislature given us the ballot language?
Yes, that's what I was just going to say. The legislation is specific on the language that is put on the ballot.
Which is an opt, it's as simple as opt-in, opt-out.
It says, "We, the citizens of Sylvania Township, Sylvania City, in your case, would be, wish to opt out of TARDA as of November, you know, at the end of this year." It's specific language.
He's generally correct.
So generally speaking, what we're asking ourselves to do, or what I guess I'm asking myself to do, is look at a piece of companion policy from the city, whether it's legislation or not, that would talk about what options we would provide, right? The legislation will rise or fall based on a very narrow proposition. But we then as council have to fill in the blanks in terms of what happens next, if for example, if it doesn't pass. Correct? Two separate processes. We can't build ballot language that says this is what happens if it fails.
No, we can't.
Okay.
This is, you know, you can vote to authorize legislation, which is fine. The other side of the coin is, from time to time, I've had legislation available when council decides to talk about it anyway. So it may not be, so I understand there's a deadline coming, and I can read the tea leaves between tonight and coming into our next council meeting and have something available, whether it's passed as a motion tonight or not. But that's for you to consider, and whatever you'd like to do is fine with me. But technically, you can't order legislation from a committee meeting. But if the tea leaves were leading in that direction, I probably would have something available if that was the direction you wanted to take.
But a recommendation is made from the committee meeting to the council. So you vote on the recommendation at the committee meeting to the council.
Right.
And there's no reason why Mr. Moen can't get ahead of that.
I could probably get that covered.
So we don't have to vote.
I didn't say that.
Do you have a motion on the floor?
Yeah, okay. Do I need to call a question so we can continue the roll call?
I think we already called the question, and the clerk needs to call the roll.
Milner?
No.
Brown?
No.
Capellini?
No.
Kano?
Yes.
Lucy?
No.
Westfall?
No.
Hussman?
No.
The vote fails. I think it was 1-4 and 6 against. Is that accurate?
Yes.
All right. Motion was not accepted. I'm sure that it'll be discussed more. That brings us to the end of our agenda this evening. You have listed on the council agenda some upcoming committee meetings on Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. and Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. There's also a report from the Division of Taxation in there, and if you haven't worked the math yourself yet, that's a 3.34 increase in the balance year to date from last year. Moving in the correct direction, but comes nowhere near to closing the deficit. I don't know if it's $6 million or not. I can't confirm that. Depends what you're including, I suppose. But we have a deficit that will be very hard to address. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and this council stands adjourned until its next meeting on Monday, June 18th at 7:30 p.m. Thank you for those who stayed with us for the whole meeting.